Hey everybody, I'm Scott. I am a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Scott.
And pleasure to introduce a friend tonight that I met in a treatment center, won't say the name of it, and he came in like many of us in denial, and I remember doing some early morning walks with him, and he was ranting and raving about having to get back to school, got to do this, got to do that, and I got to see this young man in front of me grow up, and this man, about 6 months into this deal, as we're all leaving treatment, he writes in my big book, he says, you don't work your program, you don't work my program, you work the program. And I thought, oh my God, what a beautiful statement. And that's still in my third tradition big book that I had while I was in treatment. And that statement was so, for me, way beyond his years as far as in recovery, and I've always thought that from day one. He grabbed a hold of this thing, and after about 90 days is when he finally said, you know what, I want to stay. And he stayed on. He made a commitment to stay in this place for a three-quarter route, which is just to build that network. And then I watched him get to go re-enter back into the social life, back into school. And he did everything that was suggested. And as far as building a network, you know, before he even moved back up to Gainesville. And he started building a network. And he's got host of friends all over the country today. Sponsors in different places. So he can go and visit almost any town and find somebody he knows, because the man travels a lot. And he's a dear friend. I respect him very much. So I didn't understand what this 18-year-old wanted to hang around with a 38-year-old for, but we've been friends ever since, and it's going on 10 years. So I'd like to introduce you to Randy.
Hey, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Randy.
Randy.
I think Scott said everything. I don't need to say anything anymore. Makes me seem like something I'm really not. But thank you for asking me to speak. It's really a pleasure to be here. And like Scott said, the very first thing about me is that I was in extreme denial when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't want anything that anybody had to offer. I didn't want to get involved in service. I didn't want to get honest. I didn't want to work steps. I wanted to keep drinking without consequences. You know, I wanted to come to AA, figure out the answer, the quick, easy, softer way, and just slide out the door. And I was thankful that that didn't happen. I was thankful that I was able to stick around and be around some good people and go to some AA meetings and get a sponsor and that stuff, and it convinced me to want to stay. So anyway, what we kind of do is the format is that I tell what it was like, what happened to get me to come to AA, and then what my life's been like since. And I think when I was growing up, I didn't have a bad childhood. I can't blame my alcoholism on anything. It was a little bit hectic. Some bad stuff happened, but nobody made me drink. You know, I like to drink from a real early age. I like to drink and do some other stuff, but I'm mainly just going to talk about alcohol because it's AA. But I liked to drink a lot when I was young. You know, it made me feel good. I remember my first drink like it was yesterday. You know, I'm sure you guys have heard that before. I remember exactly what it looked like outside, who I was with, what we did after we drank, the stories we made up, the people that we were with, and I can't remember with any kind of recollection any other day of my life as well as I remember that one. And I don't know if that makes me an alcoholic, I don't know, but I think I was predetermined to enjoy alcohol. And as soon as I took that first drink, man, it just felt like more. You know, it just felt like more. I just wanted to do it again. I wanted to do it, you know, the next day. And unfortunately, I did. You know, unfortunately, I did what I wanted to do, and that was kind of a pattern in my life. And the thing was, before I got into drinking, I had problems with self-esteem. You know, I had problems in social interactions. I had problems growing up and acting like a man. I had problems dealing with my feelings and emotions, and my household was kind of in a wreck. My mom is in AA, thankfully, today. Growing up, she wasn't. And so things were just really in turmoil constantly. And it allowed me to kind of go by the wayside. My parents are kind of doing their own thing. I was always sneaking out and staying out too late and doing stuff I shouldn't have been doing. And I didn't have a lot of, they didn't watch over me a lot. I was kind of given a lot of free rein. And I never really felt like you guys understand. Like, I never really felt like I fit in. I would go to different groups of friends, or I'd try and get involved in different stuff, and I just never felt like people wanted me there. And I desperately, desperately wanted to. Like, I desperately wanted you to like me. People say that they're people pleasers. I wasn't really a people pleaser. I wasn't trying to make you happy. I just wanted you to like me. And I think I searched for that for a long time. And then when I found alcohol, I got that. You know, I was always the guy that brought alcohol to the party, and, you know, we're all underage, and it seemed like people kind of liked me when I drank. I think the voices in my head quieted when I drank. And at first, when I drank, it was really good. Like, I didn't have a lot of consequences early on. I was able to do it with impunity. I was able to drink somewhat normally. You know, I would be able to drink on the weekends and get up on Monday and go to school and go to work and function normally. And it was like that for a few years. You know, I was able to keep it under control, kind of keep it under wraps. But then what happened was alcohol started to take control of me. I started to develop this allergy to alcohol. And when I heard about allergy the first time, I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. Today, it makes perfect sense. What happened was when I started drinking, it felt like more. I just wanted to drink more. I would drink a couple, then that third or that fourth drink, I wanted more than that second drink. I was never happy with just having a couple and putting it down. My sister is not alcoholic. She can have a couple drinks, she'll have a glass of wine with dinner, maybe not even a whole glass, and be able to put it down and be completely happy. That was not me. Like, I don't even know what, I don't think I've ever had less than two or three drinks at a time. I was always mildly, I don't know, more or less intoxicated. You know, I was always pretty drunk. I never really drank just to drink. I drank for the effect. And what happened was after I had these couple of drinks, I would get drunk and I wouldn't be able to stop. I'd want to say, all right, I promised myself today I'm going to have like four or five, put it down, be productive tomorrow. You know, I had a plan. I had a scheme. I had an idea of how it was going to work, of how I was going to put it into motion. But I'd get a couple drinks in, and then pretty soon I'm, you know, drunk as an owl, and I can't help it, you know. And then I get great ideas, like getting behind the wheel of my car, or, you know, telling my boss what I really think about him. You know, I get great ideas when I'm drunk that aren't really great ideas. And what happens is that I couldn't control how much I drank. And the worst part was that when I wasn't drinking, I thought about drinking. I came to know it as an obsession. You know, I would think about drinking when I wasn't drinking, and then the only time when I was really happy throughout that day began to be when I was either on my way to get alcohol or that first or second drink. That first drink, man, there was nothing like it when I was young. You know, that first drink, I knew instantly it would take away my problems. I knew that's what I needed. It became my solution to life. And I began to see my friends would drink to get drunk and party on a Saturday. Drinking made me feel normal. I would drink on a Tuesday morning because it helped me. It started to help me, you know, control my life, control my emotions. And I was starting to fall back on it as this is the way that I need to survive. This is what I rely on. This is my solution. I couldn't see that things were really going wrong in my life. And things weren't really bad at first, like I said, but things started to get bad quickly. I think Bill talks about crossing this imaginary line as alcoholics, and unfortunately we don't see it in time to stop, right? I crossed that line quickly. You know, within a couple years of drinking, I crossed that line, and I couldn't stop. I desperately wanted to stop. I started having a lot of trouble at school, started having a lot of trouble at home, started to get in trouble with the law, just like nothing seemed to go right, and I thought it was my fault. I would say that I would be somewhere, I would try and be accountable, but I wouldn't show up. I would say that I would call you, or I would take my sister out on her birthday, and I wouldn't do it. And I began to really have a hard time just dealing with life in general. And I thought alcohol was the only thing that I had on my side to keep me alive. And I don't know at what point I decided, or at what point it really made sense to me, but I learned and I realized that I was really only living and existing for that first half hour or that first hour of drinking. That was the best part of my day. No other part of my day was happy anymore. Like, I got really, really depressed. Like I said before, my self-esteem fell to the floor. I couldn't look people in the eye. I just had a hard time. It really, really took control of my life. And I had, like Scott said, I don't know if you touched on it, but I had failed out of school, and I had lost a job, lost a couple jobs, crashed a couple cars, got in trouble with the police. Just the trouble that we get into when an alcoholic drinks, right? It's the price of doing business with alcohol when you're an alcoholic. And I begin to see these things pile up, and I'm just living at that point for that half hour. That's all I wanted. I want that instant gratification just to numb the pain, numb the feelings that I couldn't control. Because I started drinking early on, I didn't really learn how to deal with stuff like an adult. I ran away from a lot of stuff. It was a lot easier for me to look the other way and not pay attention. I didn't know how to control fear. I didn't know how to control anger. I didn't know how to control resentment or jealousy. And because of that, I didn't learn how to deal with these things. Those things really ran my life. And I thought it was alcohol that was helping me to wash that stuff away, not knowing it was killing me from the inside. And because I was living for that short amount of time where alcohol worked, it was slowly killing me. And I realized that I was only really living for that half hour, that hour of joy in a day, not realizing that I was willing to die for that same period of time. And at that time, nearing the end of my drinking, I knew nothing of spirituality. I knew nothing of God. I was just partying hard, you know? I thought I was having a good time. I was the guy that people wanted to be around. I was the guy that people would compare themselves to say that they weren't as bad as that guy. And I think as long as I could say that I was still worse or better off than somebody, as somebody was still worse off than I was, then I had a way out and I didn't have to get better. When I turned 17, I got the chance to go to school. I got the chance to be away from my crazy alcoholic mom and all the hospital stays and the suicide attempts and the treatment centers and get away and finally be on my own. I thought that was the answer, to have some self-sufficiency, to be out on my own. And I went up to school, I went up to college, and I lasted 6 weeks on my own. You know, I lasted just a short amount of time without somebody being able to take care of me. And I got into some trouble again, and I had to go back to the hospital again. And this time, my mom was in treatment right down the road. I can say where I went, I don't care. It was right down the road. And she was going into treatment again, and she was giving Alcoholics Anonymous a try again. And I didn't really have the best thoughts of AA. I didn't think it worked. I was like, there's no way I'm going to come into a room and talk to a group of people about my problems, read a book, follow some steps on the wall, get on my knees and pray, and this is going to be fixed. You don't know how I drink. You don't know what it's like to be up at 2 in the morning, hating yourself, hating life, knowing that you're going to get fired tomorrow and that your girlfriend's cheating on you and just curling up on the carpet and hating yourself. You guys don't know what that's like. Little did I know how much experience that everybody had in AA that was going to help me. But I had this idea, this preconceived idea of what AA was, and I thought it was a crock, you know. I didn't think it was, I thought it was kind of a fleeting movement of people getting together and drinking coffee. Because I had been to AA meetings before with my mom, and I had just seen it not work, not knowing that, you know, she wasn't really following directions to help sobriety come into her life. But I knew I needed help. I was in such denial of my disease. I was in such denial of being a drug addict and an alcoholic. I could convince you that I didn't have a problem. I could convince you because I believe that myself. I had lied so much. I had been so dishonest in my past life that I began to believe that lie. You know, have you guys ever been honest when, you know, telling the truth was easier? I did it all the time. I was so dishonest in creating this other life. The alcoholic really leads the double life. There's the life that he wants everybody to see. I'm doing great, smiling, and I'm, you know, doing okay. And then there's what's really going on. And I really wanted to push that part away. I didn't want to get honest. I didn't want to say I need help. But I knew something was wrong, you know? I had that pit in my stomach that I just couldn't let go of. You know, those feelings of not self-regret, but almost like self-hatred, you know? A really, really good friend of mine that I met in AA that had a huge impact on my sobriety kind of puts it like, you know, when you wake up in the morning and you had a bender the night before and you go into the bathroom and you splash some water on your face and you look in the mirror and you're like, I did it again. I didn't mean to. I meant to have a good time with the guys or take that girl out or whatever, but I did it again. I had way too many and I did stuff I shouldn't have done. I said stuff I shouldn't have said, and now I'm paying the repercussions for it. And I learned it was that bitter and incomprehensible demoralization of just really just not being able to look at yourself in the mirror. And I'm skipping over a lot, by the way, because it's not as important. What was important is that the feelings that I encountered that finally allowed God to come into my life. All the running and the kind of the drunkalogue everybody's done. So when I was finally willing to admit that there was a problem, I was forced to go to this treatment center. And I said, all right, I'll go. But I didn't think it was going to work. I went to appease the parents, to get them off my back, so I could learn to drink successfully, check AA out, see what you guys had to offer, maybe get a loan, and then be on my way and not come back. And I went into this treatment center, and they're like, what's your problem? You know, what's going on? You know, what are you into? What's your story? And I'm like, nothing. I'm just here. You know, I had some bad luck. I did some stuff I shouldn't have done, hanging out with some wrong people. But I think if I just hang out with different people, study a little harder, get a good job, fix all my outside stuff, I think I'll be all right. I don't think I really need to take a look at myself or get God in my life or do any of these steps that you guys have on the wall here. It's great for you. I mean, you keep doing what you're doing, but I don't think I need any of that. And then I did the drug test, and then I had to really get honest about what I was getting into. And the thing is I think for one of the first times in my life, I was probably honest with somebody. You know, for my first few days of getting sober, I wasn't honest. I was really trying to keep up that image that we wanted the world to see of everything's going really well, and I got it under control, and I just need to control my drinking, and I'll be fine. For the first time in my life, I got honest with somebody about what I was doing and how I was feeling, and it was in an AA meeting. My very first meeting, I went to the Yana Men's Friday Night Group down in South Tampa, and I was overwhelmed. You know, there was like 100 guys in this room talking about God and the Big Book, and I was overwhelmed with AA. And I said, I still don't think I want a part of any of this. I'm going to give it a shot. I'll try it for 30 days like they wanted me to, but I don't think this is going to work. You guys don't know what's wrong with me. You don't understand me. Because I was completely selfish and self-centered. I was an alcoholic. I was a young punk kid with a real bad problem with alcohol and drugs. But during that meeting, one of the coolest things happened, and it happens all the time now. During this meeting, my very first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I got just the tiniest bit of hope, you know? I got the tiniest bit of hope that I could stay sober. I saw guys picking up 90-day chips, which seemed like an eternity to me. If you guys ever try to stay sober for 90 days on your own without coming to AA, it seems like it's like being in purgatory for me. You take away my alcohol and my drugs from me, and I become a very, very bad person to be around before. Now I'm okay. But before, you took away the alcohol from me when I was active, and I got worse. I didn't get better. You would think that I would get better. You took the alcohol away, and I got worse. The voices didn't quiet down. The self-hatred didn't go away. I still was this completely selfish and self-centered person. Now I don't have alcohol. I don't have anything to cope. I have no coping mechanisms whatsoever. My first AA meeting, I got hope. There were guys talking about being sober and being happy. There were guys sharing their story and saying that they were able to deal with it a day at a time read this book, do these steps, get a sponsor, call some people, pray to God, you know, simple stuff, you'll be happy and you'll be okay. And I wasn't the kind of person, I don't really respond well to it. A lot of people say when newcomers come in that newcomers don't know anything and shut up and sit down, and I couldn't respond to that. I was so full of self-loathing and selfishness that I just needed somebody to care, kind of, you know. I don't know if that's kind of funny to talk about, but I didn't need somebody to yell at me. I've been yelled at my whole life. I've been looked down on my whole life for what my problem was. I'd always people, you know, telling me, just like it says in More About Alcoholism, that you have such a bright future, why don't you quit? Or you have such a good girl, why don't you quit for her? And all of these reasons that I should have been able to at least cut down, and I couldn't, and I didn't know why. You asked me why I drank, and the most honest answer I had was, I don't know. I just like to do it, and I can't stop. And for the first time, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, nobody looked down on me. You know, I had never been told in an AA meeting not to come back. I had been told in a lot of places not to come back before I got into AA. And no matter what I've done in AA, or no matter what I've said, or anything like that, I've always been told to keep coming back. I've never told anybody not to come back to an AA meeting. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about Alcoholics Anonymous, is that there's no failing. You don't get a grade. You know, I think we already failed the test, right? And now we're here to figure out how to do well, how to be well. My first AA meeting, I picked up a white chip and just kind of going through the motions. It was all like, my life was like in slow motion, you know? I think I was also coming out of the fog of what I was on, but my life was like in slow motion, and I got a white chip, and a couple people came up and talked to me because they saw that I was a newcomer, and I obviously was deer in headlights. I had no idea what was going on with my life, and I think they set me on a path that I'll be forever grateful for. Like Scott mentioned, I was in a lot of denial when I first came in that I needed this. I was living this idea, I had this obsession that one day, somehow, someday I would be able to drink like a normal person. And in order to get sober, in order to be happy, and in order to do well in here, that idea has to be smashed. It can't be held on in the back of your mind somehow, well, maybe try this for a year, see how it goes, then I'll return back to drinking. So guys came up to me and they said, do you want to get sober? And I was like, yeah, I think I do. I think I do want to get sober. I'm willing to give this a try. And they're like, well, here's what you do. There's no magic formula. There's no magic cure. But you can do what we've done, and that will help you. And I was like, all right, I can dig that. Nobody's telling me what to do, but you're saying that if I do what you did, it could kind of work. I can kind of dig that. And like, here's what you do. You take our numbers, and you give us a call. I want you to call us tonight, right after this meeting. And I want you to go to a meeting every day and read some of your big book. They gave me a big book. How cool is that? Read the doctor's opinion and Bill's story. Pray on your knees tonight to God, whatever you want it to be. Doesn't have to be my God. Doesn't have to be the God. Just your kind of idea of a higher power. And then I want you to read this big book, go to a meeting, call me, and let's meet at a meeting tomorrow. And I was like, well, I don't know if I want to be that sober, you know? Like, that sounds like a lot of work. I just kind of want you to tell me how I can be happy and just forget about alcohol instantly. I just want it to be removed instantly, never thinking about it again, be on my way, not have to go to meetings. And that just wasn't how it worked. So slowly and surely, I started to go to meetings, not thinking that it was really going to work. I still didn't buy in because I had seen it for a number of years not work. But I was still going, and one of the coolest things happened is that I remember a couple months in, there had been a day where I didn't think about drinking. A whole day. Because you guys are the alcoholic, like I was an alcoholic, I didn't think for a few hours about not drinking. I thought about drinking all the time. I thought about drinking, I would wake up from sleeping and think about drinking. I would wake up at 3 a.m. not having anybody to talk to, with voices so loud I couldn't shut them up. And I remember slowly and surely I started to think about drinking less and less and less. And one of the coolest things happened. I was getting involved in a little bit of service at this Friday night men's group, just because they told me to, not because I wanted to. And I was greeting at the door, and I was saying hi to people. And this guy walks in, this guy that I really respected, this big guy, and his name's Mike, and he's kind of like well respected at the group. When he talks, everybody kind of listens. And I stuck out my hand, and before I said hi, he said, "Hey, Randy, thanks a lot for greeting," and he walked right in. And my heart blew up like a balloon, you know? I had never had anybody thank me for doing something just because I was doing it, you know? I had never had anybody thank me for just being there, for participating. My whole life, the people that I considered friends only thanked me and wanted me to be there if I had something to offer. You know, my whole life was, what can I get out of you? What do you need from me? Why should I talk to you? I had never done anything for free and for fun before. When I came into AA, they showed me how to live and how to love people. And that was a really, really neat experience for me. So it really got me wanting to be involved and kind of getting to know people. And that's another thing. When I first came in, I didn't like close physical contact. You know, Scott probably remembers, I didn't like hugging. Handshakes was about as much as I wanted to do. I didn't like being close with anybody. Anybody that I had ever loved in my life had hurt me. You know, when I came in, I wore it like a badge of honor, that there's nothing you could say or do that hasn't already happened to me. And just this wallowing in self-pity of who I was, you know. When I came into AA, I felt love for the first time. Not from friends and people that I would call family today. I kept getting involved in AA, and I kept trying to go to more and more meetings. There was a couple meetings that really, really helped me. A couple guys that are sitting in this room that I met early on that were doing the right thing and that seemed to be kind of happy. And that was what I was drawn to. I had gotten away from the old life of darkness and unhappiness and running all the time. Like, I had gotten away from that. I started to live a slower life and a more peaceful life and started smiling more. It had been a few years since I laughed, you know, not being under the influence. It had been a few years since I really smiled. And I don't look for happiness. I think happiness is a really, really lofty goal. Today I look for joy and for peace. You know, I look for contentment. I look to just be, on a day-to-day basis, I'm pretty satisfied. So I started getting a little bit more involved in AA, and I started praying. Praying was really weird for me. And getting onto my knees and saying, "God, help me. I need help." That was pretty much it. That was where I started. That's pretty much what I did before I started speaking. I said, "God, just help me. I don't have any of these really lofty, crazy prayers. You know, I do my third step prayer, seventh step prayer, but that's about as lofty as I get. I keep it really simple with God, and God keeps it really simple with me." I started praying to him. I said, "God, I don't know what to do with my life. I've done a really, really bad job directing my life from this point, you know, up until this point. Maybe at this point you could kind of take control and help me keep going to meetings. Help me just to be a better person. Help me to be a better son. Help me to not die. How about that? Let's start off with that. Help me not to kill myself a day at a time." And I think God was really waiting for me. I think God waits for alcoholics to talk to him. I think that we have a special place with God. I think we really do. I think that alcoholics torture themselves. You know, I think that we are the very hardest on ourselves. And I think that God wants us to get away from doing that. And that's really where my spirituality is. It's not religious. It's not any particular faith or denomination or sect. It's, I think God wants us to be joyous and happy and free. And that's what I've found in AA. And I started doing my steps, and I had mountains of resentments. Mountains of people I was mad at. Mountains of people that had done wrong for me, and I was righteous to be angry at them. And I had stayed sick for a long, long time thinking that way, thinking that the world owed me something, when I was really just a little, I don't want to curse, but an ungrateful little S that couldn't get my life together, you know? And I hadn't done service my whole life. I knew nothing of what it was about. And getting into AA and getting involved in these steps started to get me into that. I was able to, I could understand the powerlessness and unmanageability thing. I was like, yeah, when I drink, my life goes to hell. I understand that. That makes a lot of sense to me. When I drink, I don't have power over what happens after it. When I am drinking, my life does get unmanageable. I haven't been able to hold down a job. I haven't had the same friends. I haven't been in the same school. I haven't had, held the same job. The only thing that was constant in my life from the time I picked up my first drink until I stopped was alcohol. I didn't have nothing was continuous in my life until I stopped drinking. And then I could dig the idea that some kind of higher power could remove this insanity from me. And the insane part of my life wasn't the broken homes or the unhappy marriages. It wasn't the lost jobs or failing out of school for me. The insane part of me was thinking that someday, somehow, I could fix it. Someday, somehow, I could drink normally. And like I said before, in order to be sober and to be recovered, that idea really has to be smashed. It really has to be smashed. And I used to hear a guy say that in a meeting, and he used to repeat himself a lot. And I'm like, why do you say it so much? I heard you the first time. Why did you say it? And that's why I said it twice. And he's like, so you drank differently every day, huh? That was how you do it. I think that we need to hear stuff again and again, just like you drank again and again. And I never questioned him again after that. And slowly and surely, through doing the work, my life started to get a little bit better. Like I said, I started smiling for the first time. It had been a long time since I smiled, It had been a long time since I slept soundly. I couldn't sleep for probably my first 6 months. I couldn't get a good night's sleep. And once I started getting okay and right with God, my life just started to get happier. It started to get happier day by day. It started to get a little bit more joyous and a little bit more peaceful. And then I did my fourth step. And the fourth step was an eye-opening experience for me. I had been mad and angry at people for such a long time, and I didn't know why. And I always thought it was their fault. That was as far as I ever got, was to say, that person wronged me. Let's leave it at that. Close the book. I'm okay to be angry. I'll never talk to them again. And I hate everybody that looks like them, And then when I did my fourth step, it was this really, really eye-opening experience for me, because I got to see where I had a part in the situations that had happened, the people with whom I was angry. And I got to see my part in it, and then that was able to help me do a sixth and a seventh step. It was help me to see where were my handicaps, where were my defects of character, and stuff I never wanted to do again. And I got to slowly see the jealousy, the fear, the resentment, the anger. I got to slowly see those things fade away and fade out of my life. And pretty soon, I wasn't living just for that 30-minute interval of being a little bit happy once a day. I started to get away from from just wanting that moment of my day, I started to want to live, basically. Have you ever woken up when you were in active alcoholism, and you woke up and you would see the clock on the wall, and you weren't sure if it was 7 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock in the morning, and you weren't sure if you had somewhere to be, if you were supposed to be at work or not, and you woke up and you said, I'm alive, and that's okay, but if I didn't wake up, that'd be okay too? Because I did that a lot. I had those days when I would wake up and I wasn't sure if I wanted to or not. And I remembered when I started being about halfway through my steps, when I started getting to my eighth and ninth step, I started to want to wake up. I was able to start looking people in the eye again. I was able to start extending my hand and saying hi, and I was getting active in service this whole time and going to AA meetings and talking to a sponsor. And my road in early recovery was really rocky. My first sponsor went out, and I thought that was really weird because I didn't think they were allowed to. I didn't think that they were supposed to. I thought they were supposed to help me. That was his sole purpose in life, was to help me. And my first sponsor went out, and I thought it was a really, really bad deal. And I was so lucky that my friend had a sponsor that was still around. And I just kind of picked up on him, and I was like, all right, well, that's cool. Well, can I just hang out with you guys until I get a new sponsor? And they're like, yeah, recovery's for everybody. Come on, we're talking about the book. And I was like, cool, I'm in. Let's talk about it. My sponsor went out. He doesn't call me anymore. And then, unfortunately, his sponsor went out, and then we were kind of left sponsorless for a little bit. But then we went to his sponsor's sponsor. And it was like a little bit rocky, but it kind of worked. And we were getting involved this whole time and starting to have fun. I thought that when I got sober, my life was over. You know, I thought that I would never have a good time again. I thought that I would never laugh or be able to have, you know, the stories to tell anybody or anything like that. I started to have a really good time, and I was sober, and I didn't need to be under the influence to have a good time. I never thought that would happen. And I lied to myself that I'll never have a good time again, thinking that the last few years of my drinking was a good time. You know, I could lie to myself, and then I had to really, really understand and be true and say that that wasn't a good time. You know, I wasn't having fun. And then I did my 8th and my 9th step, and I'm just running really quickly through the steps because I always like to touch on it because it's what really saved me. I think without doing the steps and without getting a sponsor and without getting to know God, you're going to have a really, really difficult time in AA. I think it's cool to go to meetings. I think it's wonderful to go to as many meetings as you can. But until you get to meet and have a relationship with some kind of higher power through working the steps of the sponsor, sobriety is really, really tough. And so I just like to touch on it really quickly because to show that it really worked, and just by doing it, even if I didn't really want to, even if I just did the work and try to put in a couple hours a week of doing solid book work, it really, really saved me. So I did my 8th and my 9th step, and I went to my family, and I went to past employers, and I went to ex-girlfriends, and I went to old friends, and I told them what happened. You know, I told them what really was the nature of my wrongs, and I made amends for it. And I didn't grovel. You know, I didn't say, I'm sorry, please forgive me. How many times had I said, I'm sorry, and it didn't mean anything? Sorry didn't mean much coming from me. Saying I'll never do it again didn't mean much coming from me. But I really, really tried to right the wrong. I had about 6 or 7 months sober at that time, and I started to make amends. And one little thing I learned is it's not always the best idea to take an ex-girlfriend out to a crowded restaurant and make amends when there's a lot of people around. Just a tip. So I learned that through setting right my wrongs, right, I cleared this wreckage of my past. I got the promises that it talks about. It's the 5th step promises, but I really experienced it after the 9th step. I got the 9th step promises and the 5th step right around the same time. I was able to start looking people in the eye after that. I would look down at my feet a lot when I came in. And I think that a lot of times I can see if somebody hasn't really truly worked the steps and gotten that freedom, if they share and their eyes are down and they can't really talk to you eye to eye, they haven't gotten that freedom yet that comes from clearing the wreckage and meeting a higher power. And I was able to go to some people that I thought that I would never be able to go to. You know, people I owed money to or people that I had done some bad stuff to, and truly be honest. And it was like a little bit of pain for like an hour, lifetime of freedom. A little bit of pain and nervousness for like a week up to it, pain for an hour, lifetime of freedom. And there's nobody now today that I owe money to, you know, that I, you know, isn't like a credit card or something. But there's nobody that I've taken money from. There's nobody that I said I would pay back and I haven't paid back. There's nobody that I said I would do something for and I don't do it or have a real legitimate excuse why. There's nobody that I'm running away from anymore. I don't have to look over my shoulder, and I did for a long, long time. I was a runner. I ran away from anything hard in my life. That's all I ever knew to do. I didn't have adult emotions. I started drinking really young. I missed the whole part of adult emotions, you know? And starting to feel for the first time, early sobriety was really, really hard because I started to feel fear for the first time. Started to feel how to deal with anger correctly for the first time. Starting to feel joy for the first time. This all was really, really new to me, and not being under the influence of alcohol. And then working 10, 11, and 12 was very much the maintenance part. If I felt fear, resentment, anger, jealousy start to crop up in my life, I wanted to talk about it with somebody. If I owed an amends, I did it. And then I wanted to keep praying. I wanted to keep getting to know God and let Him to know me. And then working with others was a huge part. Just getting to know people and letting them get to know me. And sobriety has just been a blast since. Like Scott said, I got sober in 2003, and my mom's been sober ever since, which is cool. And I failed out of school, and and I've been able, I was able to go back, you know, there, I had to jump through a lot of hoops. And when I went to go back into school, I had about a year sober when I went to go back, and I went and talked to the dean of the school, and I went up to him. I was like, you know what? I'm getting sober. Hooray for me! I want a parade. You know, I'm paying my bills now. I'm showing up for stuff. And he's like, so you're doing stuff that everybody else has been doing all along, right? And you want your parade. But it was funny because he asked me. He didn't just let me back in right away. He's like, who's your sponsor? The guy knew about AA. Where's your home group at? And I went back up to Gainesville. And the guy knew about AA, and I think it was just a godsend that nobody was just believing my lies anymore. I had to be honest, and I was honest about being in recovery. I had recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. God had taken this drink problem away from me, and as long as I stayed very, very, the word is escaping me, but as long as I stayed diligent, that's what it was. As long as I stayed diligent about going to meetings, talking to a sponsor, praying to God, getting involved in the book and trying to help others, I didn't have to have this fear of being drunk. I didn't have this fear that I was going to get drunk in an instant. I don't normally finish doing work with a newcomer, praying to God, going to a meeting, and then somehow end up drunk 30 minutes later. I didn't have this fear of alcohol. I had recovered. And it talks about it in the book, and I think it's important that I'm not slowly just trudging this road of always just trying to get sober. Staying sober was really easy. Getting sober was really hard. But staying sober has been a blast. Like, I think that God's really given me more than I've ever been able to do. I was one of the best things. I was able to work in the jails for like a year and a half. And I've gotten away from it, unfortunately, because I travel now for work, and I'm never in one city for all that long. But it was one of the neatest things to see people that had given up, really had given up on themselves, right? It wasn't that society had given up on them. They gave up on themselves. And to see them get well, to see somebody, not like you can't always see it in yourself, but to see somebody else get well is one of the best experiences of AA. And then you start to see them get well and help somebody else, blows your mind. You know, blows your mind. And Bill talks about that in the book, of seeing somebody else get well and start to help still others is one of the experiences that we can't miss. It's been a blast. Sobriety's been a lot of fun. I have wonderful friends. I have wonderful people that I can call family today in AA. And I've been blessed with wonderful sponsorship, been able to sponsor and have home groups and be a productive member of society, pay my taxes. I don't break the law anymore as much. You know, I speed sometimes, but I don't break the law on a daily basis. You know, and I never thought. I think if the me from 10 years ago had met the me that I am today, he'd probably kick my ass. But I'm very much a happier person today. I'm much better of a person to be around, and that's all due to AA and a higher power. You know, just continuing to work, continuing to be there for my friends and family. And thank you very much. The time really went by very quickly. Hopefully it made some kind of sense and was somewhat coherent. But thank you very much for asking me to speak, and that's all I got.
Randy L.